Are you guys ready to record this whole thing all over again?
I didn't care for it. I didn't buy it.
That seems pretty ridiculous.
I don't even want to think about the possibility of you having your dick out.
Yikes.
Is this the most important thing in the universe? What happened to it? I don't know.
I needed to suck in absolutely every moment of awesomeness.
Yeah. Welcome back to another great episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. David here with Justin and Randy. How the hell are you guys doing today?
Fabulous!
Fantastic. How you doing?
I'm doing so good, and everyone's so happy and pumped out. So let me take you down a little bit. Actually, I shouldn't even say sad news. Terrible news. 2016 has just been a shit year for a lot of our favorite, celebrities and icons, tragically passing away. And this week we lost Gene Wilder, who I know all of us here are huge fans of for different reasons. And, to me, he's Willy Wonka. He's Blazing Saddles. He's all those great movies with Richard Pryor, Silver Streak, Stir Crazy, Hear No Evil, Still No Evil. And, I'm just devastated and in shock. What about you guys? What about you, Justin?
Yeah, that was pretty sad. What's crazy is that just last weekend, I was kind of going through some boxes, and I lifted up one of them, and there was the book that he wrote. I think it was My French Whore, and it's a delightful little tale. And I was like, oh, man, I want to reread this. And then I kind of set it aside, closed the box, and then, 2 days later, I found out that I woke up to news that he had passed away, and I was devastated.
Yeah. What about you, Randy?
This is just another raindrop in an already shitstorm of this year. For me, my favorite performance was in Blazing Saddles, at one of my all-time favorite movies. Close second would have to be Young Frankenstein, but he is a tremendous talent. And, it hadn't really occurred to me that he'd been out of the public eye for quite a while, but apparently he was suffering from Alzheimer's, and he wasn't doing any kind of public appearances, and, he was probably being very private. His family was very private with him. But, it's just one of those things that he'd kind of fallen out of the public eye as of late, and there's this gigantic outpouring of support and love for him once he's gone. But it's one of those things where I wonder if people would be just – if they would react different if they saw this show of love and support while they were still alive. An interesting thing that I saw going around, and I even shared it myself on Facebook, was it's a meme with Mel Brooks on it. It says, just for the record, I absolutely love Mel Brooks, and he's not even dead yet. But it just goes to show.
Yes, I love Mel Brooks before he died.
Yeah.
Dead yet.
Yeah. It's like the whole thing is like, let's appreciate people while they're still around.
Yeah, I agree.
For the talent that they are,
Yeah, he kind of fell off. He kind of disappeared when his wife, Gilda Radner, passed away, in the late 90s or mid 90s. And he really has didn't do much since then. And I remember Spielberg recently wanted him to play in Ready Player One. He wanted him to be the kind of like the Bill Gates, the Steve Jobs type person. And it was kind of almost like a Willy Wonkian type role, and he would have been absolutely perfect for it. And I remember thinking that it was weird he didn't take the role, because it would have been something that would have been – he would have filmed it all in, the course of, 2 or 3 days. It wouldn't have been very strenuous. But then, of course, now that we know that he was, suffering with this terrible disease and stuff like that, that it obviously makes sense now.
Yeah, his – I shared this with you guys. His nephew was the one that was, a spokesperson for the whole thing, and – when asked why he didn't disclose of his illness, his reply was he simply couldn't bear the idea of one less smile in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, that is just – that's heartbreaking. It just crushed me when I read that. I was so sad.
But it speaks to his character so much that he would,
does.
That he would have that kind of concern for strangers,
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Randy mentioned his favorite Wilder performance. What about you, Justin? What's your favorite Gene Wilder performance?
Oh, man. See No Evil, Hear No Evil. It's one of my favorite movies.
That is a good one. Buzzy was a woman?
That's so funny. I love that movie so much. When he's all stomping at, like they just escaped from the police, and he's stomping so they don't look like they're together because they're looking for a blind guy and a deaf guy. So he's like 10 feet in front of him, and he's stomping so Richard Pryor could hear him and follow him. And he's like, he says, "I feel ridiculous." Richard Pryor says, "You look fine to me." the whole movie was like that. And he's like, "You're gonna let me know if you see anyone coming." He's like, "Yeah, I'll yell my damn head off." shit like that is just so funny, and he's just a comedic genius. His timing was perfect, and I am just gonna miss that man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think from a performance standpoint, Scene Over Hillover may have been like his best, because everything was just like the dialogue and the timing, everything on that was just spot on. I think it had a lot to do with that he was working with, you know, Richard Pryor, who was also a comedic genius, and I think that they worked so well off of each other. But I'm going to go Willy Wonka. I know you guys don't have the fondness in your heart, but it was always a big part of my childhood. And, you know, it made him a magical guy. And it, later on in life, obviously, I found him through, like, you know, Blazing Saddles. And it's very unfortunate that he passed away and joins. I mean, this year's Oscars telecast, the In Memoriam, is just going to be ridiculous. I mean, there's just.
It's going to be like a 2-hour show. And they always cut it. People always get neglected. And yeah. It's always offends somebody. And I don't know, man. It's going to be tough. Yeah. Tough to watch this year.
I think people get offended because, like, at least the last, like, 3 or 4 Oscars, there's been, like, large chunks of the In Memoriam where they're, like, focusing on the performer.
Yeah.
To where they need to just. It's great if you want to have Jennifer Hudson or someone sing. It's great. It's powerful and moving when they do, but just don't stop the In Memoriam section. Just keep, you know, cycling through people.
Keep it going.
Yeah, I mean, you know, outside of, you know, the big music people we lost, you know, like David Bowie and Prince, you know, we lost, you know, Anton Yelchin, which is tragic because he was so young. You know, we lost Gary Shandling, who, you know, I love. We lost Doris Roberts. You know, everyone loves Raymond and stuff like that. Alan Rickman. I mean, that's a big. That's a big punch to the nards. So, I mean, yeah, we lost some giants.
We did. And then the guy, oh, gosh, I forget his name. He was in Big Lebowski. He was the...
He was the Big Lebowski.
So he died. I forgot about that guy. So he died, and then so did the private investigator. The brother Seamus. He's like an Irish monk. He's like, what the fuck are you talking about? He was also in Joe Polito? Is that his name? Joe Polito? I forget his name. It's sad. I gotta look it up. But he just passed away, too, the other day.
Oh, too bad. And obviously, lost Kenny Baker. Lost R2. That sucks.
Oh, yeah.
Poor guy. Yeah.
That's terrible.
He was I met him at Celebration 2. He signed my stuff, and he was like the nicest guy. Because... You know, it took him forever to sign his signature because he's got, you know, small hands. But he was always nice. He was talking to me while he was doing it. And him and his wife were both there, and they were just absolute delights.
Oh, sad. John Polito was his name.
Oh, okay.
You would know him if you saw him.
I'm sure I would. Yeah, we got to... 2016 needs to stop.
Yes, like right now.
Muhammad Ali. He was the greatest. He told... That's what he would tell us.
Right. It's pretty good.
Yeah. So that kinda sucks. So now that we're all sad and I wanna just go sit in the corner and just, like, you know, cut
cry.
Ourselves.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. But life goes on, Stranger Things happen, and now we're gonna get a season 2 of Stranger Things. You guys love the series. You pumped for season 2?
Yes.
Extremely. Did you guys take a look at the teaser video with all the titles from next season's episodes?
Yeah.
No. I did not. I was too busy watching Nicolas Cage fight sharks.
We'll get there!
Torpedo sharks!
Punching in the nose.
Oh.
Characters in season 2, you know, new stories. You know, the way season 1 ended, are you guys excited for the potential of the series going forward?
Absolutely. I don't know about Randy, but as I was watching it, I was worried that... I wouldn't say worried, but I wasn't sure if this was going to be its own story and then season 2 be a new kind of story. You know, like... Yeah, like True Detective or even American Horror Story, things like that. That seems to be a popular model these days. Nothing wrong with it, but I love these characters so much that I was going to be really sad if all that went away. Especially since the child actors are so good. It's kind of rare that you have an amazing child actor, let alone an entire cast of them. They were all amazing. So that was a genuine concern of mine, and now I'm really, really, really excited to see them again. Randy.
I agree. I got nothing to add to that.
Said it perfect, Justin.
I was also hoping that we would get a season two. And, I'd like to stay right in the same world that we just left and maybe do a little bit more digging. I mean, if you really want to get crazy with it, like, each season could have, like, a different feel in terms of, like, a specific 80s genre. Since the first one was kind of more, like, sci-fi horror. Not really horror, necessarily, kind of suspense, maybe. Maybe we can do something a little bit more lighthearted, a little bit more Goonies-esque next time, where there's not as much life and limb that you're worried, you know. Mm. You don't have to worry about Barb dying or whatever the situation
is. Oh,
maybe.
Yeah. Really,
and
like
season
her.
Three can be the John Hughes years. They go to high school and they're all like pretty and pink and stuff.
They gotta go to a dance.
Yeah.
See, how cool is that?
It'd be pretty cool.
Season two is the Richard Donner season. Season three, John Hughes. We're good.
I like it. I'm feeling you. I'm feeling you. I could see it, but yeah. Warcraft. Big in the news right now because Legion came out and everyone's been playing it and getting their level 110 and having their fucking demon hunters camp and grief you and killing you in the world. But the movie might Duncan Jones, director of the film, he's decided that he'd be game for a sequel to Warcraft. You know, obviously they laid the seeds in the first one. You know, we saw Thrall and stuff like that. The movie made $435 million, but only $47 million was domestic box office. So I guess the question is, do you guys think we will see a sequel? I mean, the production budget they're telling us is $160 million. So you think maybe with marketing and stuff, we're at about $300 million. So it made $150 million profit.
I think it's possible. Legion has. At least according to the nice folks that were at Blizzard, the nice folks from Blizzard that were at PAX this weekend, they are really excited about Legion. They feel really good about it. Their numbers are up. They're seeing a lot of return subscribers. So with the combination of the movie, this amazing expansion, I think that it has the potential to definitely spawn a sequel. When the movie was first being made, gosh, we were still like in our infant stages of playing the game, and it seemed like a great idea, but then that was, gosh, years ago. That was like almost 10 years ago when we first heard talks about like Sam Raimi directing the movie, you know? So it seemed like it was just, that was the heyday of WoW. And with Legion being, with the content being what it is and kind of going back to that well where it was the Burning Legion with all these crazy demons and all these awesome characters and It's kind of renewed that interest, and if they're going to do it, I don't want them to sit on it. I want them to fucking go to town. Like, I want them to make a decision in the next couple of months so that they can get ready.
Yeah, strike while the iron is hot.
Yes.
Exactly.
It'll be interesting to see then if Blizzard has said they're not going to release their subscription numbers ever since, you know, Warlords, they went down to like 5.5 for having been at 10. But I want to know how successful they've been, because it could be a real study for other game manufacturers that, you know, we spoke with our wallets, you know, Legion is giving us so much shit that we wanted before that Blizzard just wouldn't give us. And, you know, everyone left during Warlords. And so we spoke with our wallets and Blizzard answered. It's like, oh shit. Yo, yeah. You want Demon Hunters? Oh yeah, you got it. You want Artifact? What you want to have Ashbringer? Sure. Here you go. And they're just kind of giving us everything we want, and everything so far has been so amazing. And other video game companies could take note, like Ubisoft, because their games are dead. I don't know. They're always broken. Every Ubisoft game I ever get, broken.
Oh, man. That's funny you say that. I honestly loved the last Assassin's Creed game, Syndicate. I thought it was so much fun.
Yeah.
Just throwing that out there. Yeah. One of the good ones.
Well, that's good. And now you're all amped and you're like, oh, Ubisoft's back on track. And you're going to get the next one, it's going to be broken. And you're going to be like, fuck Ubisoft.
I have a theory on why Assassin's Creed Unity was so terrible. It was one of the first ones that had so many characters on the screen. There was a lot of character models just present, you know, because it was like during the French Revolution. So it was just riots on the streets and just a lot of people. And I basically think that was more of like a tech demo to tie in, find a way to get as many character models on screen as possible and then work out the bugs later. And it was more of like a sacrificial lamb because Syndicate had a million characters on screen and it ended up being a success. And then also this new game that they have coming out called For Honor, which is like these giant epic scale battles with just huge numbers just attacking each other. Same concept. And sadly, I just don't think where they were at development-wise, Unity was able to make the cut. But they learned a lot from it to progress.
Well, good on them. Hopefully they can figure it out.
But this isn't a video game podcast.
No. Speaking of characters, we got Batman villain, Deathstroke. Ben Affleck even showed us a nice little video. Randy, did you see the video?
I did see the video. And you know, I thought it was pretty badass, but I didn't immediately recognize who it was. I had to read the caption under it to figure it out. Because the only Deathstroke that I'm familiar with, and this is going to kind of be terrible because I should probably be more into comics and shit, is the version from the CW TV universe that we've seen.
Yeah, sure.
That's close. Yeah.
Which is cool. I mean, he's not quite as armored up as this movie version appears to be, but I like the character, so yeah. I should bring it on.
He's a badass.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he was real rad in like Teen Titans, the Teen Titans cartoon. He's usually one of the villains there, and that's kind of where I know him best from. And so it's just cool to see him come to the big screen. He's basically, you know, I can't remember if he was first or Deadpool was first. One of them is a ripoff of the other one, and I want to say that Deathstroke may have been first.
They look a lot alike.
Yeah.
Except one is very serious and one is a real asshole.
Yeah. Because, you know, it used to be Deathstroke the Terminator. It used to be, like, his, like, sub-monarch. So, yeah.
So, Deathstroke's first appearance was in December of 1980.
Ooh.
In the new Teen Titans number 2.
Yeah, because he's Slade Wilson and Deadpool is Wade Wilson. And it's Deathstroke and Deadpool. They both have fucking pouches.
Or may have master similar. Oh, first appearance was 1991. The New Mutants, number 98.
Deadpool?
Yeah.
Written by Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, that's correct.
Yeah.
Well, created by. He did the art, yeah.
He's the guy responsible in the 90s for all those pouches, like Gambit and
buddy!
Cyclops and stuff. Yeah, Cable and stuff. If they have pouches, it's because of Rob Liefeld.
They took the fanny pack off the fanny and onto the chest and legs and shoulders and face.
Yeah, probably got that neck pouch somewhere.
Like one of those barrels filled with rum or something.
Yeah. Hey, you saw a movie this weekend, didn't you, Justin?
I did. I saw fucking Don't Breathe.
How was it?
Terrifying.
did you breathe?
A little bit. It was good. So it's not a horror movie per se. It's a psychological thriller. Totally has some crazy mindfuck moments, on the edge of your seat kind of shit. And I got scared. I'm not gonna lie. The whole theater was screaming at the right times, and everyone was into it. And it was just a lot of fun. I had no idea what to expect. I saw the trailer, and I thought it looked interesting. We love Mr. Fede Alvarez. You know, we got to interview him that time at Comic-Con. And you guys know that I loved the Evil Dead remake. I thought that was a fantastic movie. When I reviewed it for Geek Legacy, I gave it an A-, but I got an A regardless. And the man knows how to make a movie. He can get under your skin. It's not gory per se, but it has cringe-worthy moments. And there is the new trailer is like 15 seconds, like the TV spot. And it says, critics are calling it the best twist in years. And it definitely came out of left field. And I was caught off guard. And when it was over, I didn't even want to say it was a good movie. I was like, I don't even know what to call this movie, but I was glad that I watched it. I was like, holy shit. It's kind of it's a one and done, but when you watch it, it's a rewarding cinematic experience, to say the least.
Very nice.
So is it a spoiler that they're announcing that there's a twist? Or
I believe
you know
so.
That going into it?
I had no idea. And you, as an audience, probably shouldn't have either. Because now you're expecting something, you know, and that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
It would have been better if, it's not so far as like, rewind back to when Psycho came out and someone said, oh, I can't believe Norman Bates is his own mother or whatever.
What?
Yeah, exactly. That would have been a pretty big bombshell. But just saying, hey, there's a twist. Like when someone says, oh, check out The Sixth Sense, you'll love the twist at the end. It's like, okay, great. Now I've been thinking about what the twist is the whole movie.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting that you say that because I think that's one of the biggest contributing factors as to why the movie going public kind of fell out of love with M. Night Shyamalan, because they began to realize that everything had a twist. So they were so concerned with looking for the twist that they never really got re-engaged with the storytelling itself.
Right.
So, kind of a victim of his own success.
Yeah.
And he started making shitty films.
Yeah.
Well, there's that too, I suppose.
Yeah, I think his problem was he started to believe in the hype, to where he was like, you know, he was like, oh, everyone likes my twist, so now everything has to have a twist. And then, you know, it seems like he would write movies around a twist.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure when he sat down to write The Village, he's like, and it's going to be in prison time. That's the twist. Now let me work backwards.
Yeah.
And that doesn't work. It doesn't. But Don't Breathe did really well. It's number one at the box office for its second week, which is, I mean, it's a movie that cost $10 million to make, and it's going up against these heavyweights. You know, Suicide Squad was number two. You know, Kubo and the Two Strings is number three, Peace Dragon number four. So, I mean, right there is a DC Comics movie, you know, Focus Entertainment, and a Disney movie. And it, you know, it's outdid them this week. So good on them.
Yeah.
And, it's up to $51 million. So, Screen Gems knows what they're doing when they do these little horror movies. They're a smart little studio.
Dude, there's been some really good horror movies this year. I would call Cloverfield Lane. I mean, it's a psychological thriller, but I'm going to go ahead and lump that in with horror. I would say that movie was incredible. Fucking The Shallows was a lot of fun to watch. I didn't see Lights Out, but I hear good things. And then Don't Breathe. And we still got Blair Witch and fucking that new Ouija movie. Woo! A lot of action, man. It's a good year for horror movies.
Just wish I wasn't such a wuss.
Yeah, you are what you call a P word.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't even deny it.
I can't believe you saw The Ring in theaters.
Dude, it's the last one I saw. The Ring is the last horror movie I saw in the theater, and it fucking terrified me. I didn't like it. I mean, I liked it because it was a good movie, but I was just like, I don't like being scared.
Oh, that's like, it's not, you know, you're alive, man.
No, it's just not an emotion I like to experience. Yeah.
I like it a lot. It gives me a tingling in my loins.
Ooh,
in
like
your
that.
Nether regions.
Yeah.
Well, I think you're gonna have lots more tingling going on with we got the fall movie season coming up. There's gonna be lots of horror movies coming out for the Halloween time, but we got IGN put together a nice little list of the 25 movies to look forward to for the rest of 2016. Justin, you brought this one up. Anything stand out on that list?
I don't even know what's on the list.
Sully's on that.
Yeah, no.
Kickboxer Vengeance.
Oh, I know someone in that movie.
The Return of Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, shit. That's a big deal. Magnificent Seven. I'm excited for that.
What about Blair Witch? We're just talking about a horror movie. Are you excited for a new Blair Witch?
Oh, absolutely. It's time, man. I don't really count Blair Witch 2 so much. That was just kind of a, as we mentioned, Strike While the Iron's Hot. That was the first Blair Witch was, you know, the beginning of this whole found footage type of storytelling, and at least the first one to really hit it big. You know, the movie cost $8 to make, and it crushed it in theaters. You know, well over $100 million probably, that movie. And so that just wrote the book on how to shoot low budget and make buku bucks, right?
Right. Yeah. And the promise that it was real. You know, I remember that was the big thing at the time, was this really happened, guys.
Dude, I remember waiting, watching through the credits, just waiting for the whole part where it says, you know, no one was harmed during the making of this movie.
All characters are fictitious.
Fictitious, yeah. Any similarities of people alive are purely coincidental or some shit.
Yeah.
So yeah, I was genuinely concerned for those people.
Yeah, Blair Witch comes out in 2 weeks, same day as Snowden, which I still don't see. If you've seen Citizen 4, the documentary, it's on Netflix and stuff like that, I don't see the need to have an Oliver Stone-directed narrative. But it's going to be there. We'll see how it does. And the week after that, you got Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
That looks like fun.
I think so. I like the Chris Pratt there.
You like Anton Fuqua.
I do. And is fucking Hulk playing a Mexican in that movie? Is that what that's what it sounds like in the trailer? Eric Bana? They in the trailer, before it shows him, they say something about a Mexican, then it cuts to him.
Chris Pratt's like, oh good, we got a Mexican.
So we have an Australian playing a Mexican.
That's kind of funny.
That's funny.
And the week after that is Miss Peregrine's Home for Peculiar Children, X-Men meets Tim Burton. Could be fun. My kids are actually looking forward to that one. Same day, Deepwater Horizon comes out. That's Peter Berg's retelling of, you know, the Deepwater Horizon tragedy that spilled all the oil into the Gulf in 2010 or whatever. Mm-hmm. I was zero excited about this because all I think about is Mark Wahlberg in it. But then I realized, saw like making of, and then I realized that Kurt Russell also stars. And I'm like, eh, maybe I'll watch it.
Oh, shit.
Then October 7th is probably going to be where you'll start hearing Oscar buzz. Birth of a Nation comes out. It was the darling of Sundance. It's the movie that everyone was talking about after Sundance, that and Swiss Army Man. But it's probably going to win a lot of awards, especially in the wake of Oscar So White. I think that the Academy is going to maybe overcorrect next year as far as diversity with our nominees. And there are a lot of categories that that you could nominate from, but Nat Turner, he wrote, directed, starred, produced, probably did craft services for. Then we got Girl on a Train, if you read books. I don't. Then you got The Accountant, which is a really strange looking movie where Ben Affleck does math and kicks ass.
Oh yeah. He's like a janitor at a college, and then
Nope, that was his buddy, Matt Damon, in Good Will Hunting. And this one, he's the guy who would work at that college.
Oh. He saw that Matt Damon was so successful, so he went to college. He got out of the construction business.
Smart as
an accountant. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the 21st of October, got Jack Reacher. Everyone loves Jack Reacher.
I like that trailer where he gets the sheriff arrested or some shit. I don't know what happens.
Yeah, it does look pretty badass.
Two things are going to happen.
It just looks like Tom Cruise is like enjoying making movies. Do you get that vibe at all? Like when you watch like Mission Impossible and Live, Die, Repeat or whatever the hell that movie's called,
Edge of Tomorrow.
Jack Reacher. It's almost like he's trying not to smile because he's just having such a good time making these movies. And I think that's fantastic.
And you had mentioned earlier Ouija Origin of Evil that comes out the same day on October 21st and looks terrifying.
Oh man, it really does. I was sitting in my chair. I saw a trailer for it when I went to see Don't Breathe. Luckily for me, when you go see a horror movie, that's mainly what you get for trailers. It's the right demographic, right?
Yeah.
And holy shit, when the trailer ended, everyone was just kind of turning to their buddy in the seats like, oh my god, that looks so fucking scary. It was cool. I love it when everyone in the theater is on the same page. That's such a good feeling.
Yeah, that means that it was a good piece of marketing they put in front of you.
Yeah. But sometimes you hear the, well, I'll wait for Redbox, and you're like, oh, shit.
Or you hear, like, wives turning to their husbands like, we're not seeing that movie.
Yeah.
The following weekend on the 28th, we got another horror movie. We got Rings. We got the follow-up to Ring 2.
I didn't see Ring 2. I saw
That was Sarah Michelle Gellar was in that one.
Oh, she was?
No, that was The Grudge.
No, that was Grudge, yeah.
Yeah.
I saw that. I saw that movie. But I didn't see Ring 2.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people did. That's probably why it's been 11 years.
I did go on the bridge in the first Ring when she's driving across that crazy, creepy bridge. She goes to Whidbey Island to talk to like the dad or the doctor, whoever, that was talking to the little girl. And I was on the island last month when I went over the bridge. Yeah.
You ran your ass home.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
And then on that same day, on October 28th, is Inferno, the third movie in the Da Vinci Code film franchise that I don't think anyone was asking for this movie to be made.
Isn't that the one with Tommy Lee Jones and the lava and...
No, that's Volcano.
Oh. same thing.
You're thinking Dante's Inferno, which was the one with Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, that was
Bond. Dante's Peak. Yeah, yeah.
Neither one was good. And then Blockbuster's winter season begins. November 4th, Doctor Strange comes out and becomes the first Marvel movie that I could give two shits about.
Yeah, I don't know what to think about this movie. I mean, I know we're all going to see it.
Oh, yeah.
I don't get it, man. I don't understand what's happening in that movie.
Yeah. But, I mean, if you had told us, like, 3 years ago that we were going to see a movie about an Ant-Man movie and actually love it, I'd be like, oh, all right, well, maybe. I'll give it a chance. I'll go with open eyes, you know. We'll see. That same day Trolls comes out, I know we're all just stoked for Trolls, right? We're already in line. The animated Trolls, the hair dolls. No, nobody. Justin Timberlake's in it. It's a musical. They sing. DreamWorks Animation. Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah, I don't think I knew that was going to be a thing.
Oh, yeah. It's a thing. DreamWorks has got to be the laziest production company ever for animation. But, yeah, we'll see. And then, Ang Lee, director of such great movies as The Hulk, Justin's favorite, and Sense and Sensibility, Pride and Prejudice, Brokeback Mountain, and Life of Pi, he is going to direct Billy Lynn's Long Halftime Walk. Have you guys seen the trailer for this?
I have, yeah.
What is that?
I don't even know what to make of this movie.
What is that movie?
It's about an Iraq veteran who like comes home and like gets like do something like a Cowboys halftime show, and I think it's going to just flash back to.
Oh, it's like wartime stuff, and having to deal, and the fireworks are going to trigger off, like guns going off, and fighting.
What's kind of interesting about the film, aside from the pedigree of its filmmakers, is that it was shot in 120 frames per second.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I don't know if that's
the entire. Yeah. I wonder if they did that specifically. It's not going to play back that fast, I would imagine.
It's all fast. Or all slow.
No, but yeah, I mean, the entire thing would be in super crazy slow motion. But I imagine it gives them the opportunity to, at any point in time, because if you're talking about somebody like with PTSD and flashbacks. The ability to slow down time at any point in time throughout the movie is kind of a cool thing. I just hope we don't get sick to death of seeing it. You know?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of slow motion in movies.
No. I don't like slow motion. I just don't like when it's slow-mo, then fast-mo.
Honestly, it starts to drive me nuts. That last Resident Evil movie that came out, the whole fucking thing was in slow motion. Batman v Superman had all kinds of slow motion. I don't like it.
Yeah.
I would go so far as to say my favorite slow-mo thing ever is either great white sharks breaching the water and probably that...
Talking about Air Jaws?
Yeah. That's cool. I can watch that all day.
It is pretty badass.
Or even in Lord of the Rings, in Fellowship of the Ring, when Aragorn tells Frodo to just go, you know, I got this, there's orcs coming, and he comes around the corner... And it's slowed down just a little bit. Not super slow motion. It's just a few frames slower. And he kind of just bows to his sword and then just goes to town. That is powerful. And I love it.
I saw a really cool slow-mo video recently. It was a golf ball hitting steel at like 17,000 frames per second.
Wow.
And the golf ball, when it hits the steel, actually flattens. And then bounces back. It's nuts. I'll have to try to find the video. It's like, it looked like a cartoon because the ball, once it impacts, it goes completely flat. And then as it rebounds off the steel, it starts to take its shape. But then it actually stretches the other way. And it's just crazy. But it's a lot of fun. Slow-mo can be fun. Just not in movies.
Yeah.
And November 11th has a movie that I think will be very divisive on, and it's called The Arrival. Have you seen the trailer for that with Amy Adams?
That's the Sicario one.
Yes. It's the one from Dennis...
Villeneuve
or whatever. To where Amy Adams is like a super linguist, and an alien ship makes contact with us, and we have to communicate with them. And I think it can be a real fun premise of, you know, are they good? Are they bad? Do they want to talk to us? Are they just trying to learn from us? Are they just jerking us around? So, I mean, execution obviously will be important on the thing, but I'm pretty excited for it.
Yeah, and your buddy Forrest Whitaker's in it.
He is. And he's going to be in Star Wars. I'm sure he'll show up later on this list.
Busy man.
Yeah, he gets around. He's easy.
Man, that Last King of Scotland, though, he's terrible in that movie. I mean, he's a great actor, but his character is the worst.
Yeah.
True stories are the worst.
About bad people, too. It's not even like a happy movie.
Well, that's what makes it even, like, more terrible is the fact that you know it's real.
No, I don't like that.
This person did that.
Horrible. Now,
the next movie is based off a true story, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Oh. I don't even know what this movie is about. He just loses his marbles and he's got to find them all?
Yeah, I thought, like, he was the one that was catching them, but now it looks like he's the one who loses them, so he's really just covering his own ass.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Became infinitely less interesting.
Yeah, I don't like the idea that they changed Muggles. Why can't Americans be Muggles, too? That's stupid.
Instead of Nomadge?
That's the dumbest thing ever. Nomadge?
That's terrible.
Why can't they all be Muggles?
Because it's just like when you like how we have words that are different than theirs for everything.
Yeah,
like elevator and lift.
We share like 98% of the same vocabulary.
Probably like 2%.
No.
That's why you don't like British movies, because you don't understand English. You've said that.
I have said that. You're a trick. All right, you got me, Justin. Understand.
If it were 90%, you would get the gist of the movie, but you don't. You have no idea what's going on when you
but
watch.
But if there's an established franchise, why don't they just use the same fucking word?
Oh, I don't know.
It's dumb. Like there's going to be a whole part of this movie where they're going to call them like Nomads. Like, what the fuck's a Nomad? Aren't they just Muggles?
Maybe it's just a dead term. Like, this is 1926, right? So there are words that from back then that we don't use anymore.
Like,
I mean, it's 90 years ago.
Like racial words.
Okay, if that helps.
I won't even say it, never mind.
What I'm saying is there's just dead words out there. And maybe no one understands what a nomad is, so then they change it to Muggle instead.
Yes, I don't know.
How about that?
I don't know, Justin. You make a lot of sense, and it's keep me on my toes.
I took smart pills today.
Oh yeah. So you must be. So are you excited about this film?
What?
Your nomad ass. Are you excited for Fantastic Beasts?
No, not at all. The only thing that I think it has going for it is when they reintroduce the Harry Potter music in that second trailer. It made it more familiar. But honestly, I mean, I feel like I have to go see it, but I think it's going to be meh at best.
Yeah. All right. Here's the thing. What do you think? Will we or won't we see, will we see Dumbledore?
Yes.
Think so? Randy, what do you think?
I think smart money's on yes.
Because they got to bring some people, you know, just so people go, like, oh my God, look, it's Dumbledore.
Yeah. And McGonagall's like 600 years old. Dumbledore's 10,000 years old. They got to have these people.
I agree. I'm with you.
I don't know. I think that their best bet would be to bring as much familiar territory as possible. The kids, not the kids, but I mean, people that read Harry Potter love and adore all those characters, and it's ridiculous to have a whole new set of characters. You have a ridiculous franchise that billions and billions of dollars have been poured into it. Why start over?
Right. Because Colin Farrell's in this one.
Is he?
He is, yeah. He's like a bad guy. Oh. It looks like they're introducing like some good aspects. You know, they're introducing, I can't remember what they're actually called, but like Colin Farrell is part of like this group of people like against magicians.
Oh.
And so it seemed like a really cool idea.
Against magicians or wizards?
Whatever. They're the fucking magicians. like David Blaine.
Yeah, he's just trying to shut down Vegas. He's like
Copperfield. Yeah, Copperfield. He's like a fucking fraud. Make people, a car disappear.
People don't like Magic.
No.
No Madge.
No Madge. From one sequel no one asked for to Bad Santa 2.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of weird. I think this Billy Bob Thornton guy, he drives me nuts. Ever since he was a dick on some Canadian talk show, I've just not been interested in him.
What am I going to talk about this movie then?
No, it's not. Fuck
yeah. Same day, Moana, The Rock, animated. He plays Maui. It's exciting. Disney will make $1 billion, probably. And then a little independent film from Disney as well, Star Wars, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. I think if you've listened to the podcast for more than 5 seconds, you know that we all want this movie to be amazing, and we're all ready to just suck at the teat of Star Wars.
Mm, that's a big teat. Floating in weightless space.
I imagine it being like a drop of water, you know? How
it gets all chilled.
It doesn't sag. It's like perfectly round, and it's just like, just kind of like pulsing.
There you go. And the vacuum of space is just sucking all the goodness out of that teat.
No, I thought that's what we're doing. I thought we're sucking the teat.
Sure. Suckling.
We are the cold vacuum of space.
That is an apt description of us. We are the cold, deep void of space.
Speaking of suckling, I saw a lady just openly breastfeeding her baby. And, I read all these articles about people being offended by it and, you know, situations where employees handle things poorly at stores when a guest is doing that. And I've never really witnessed it firsthand until 2 days ago. And I was, I guess, taken aback when I saw it. I was like, oh, wow, that's happening.
Right.
I just kind of turned and went a different way. I don't know if uncomfortable was the right word, but I didn't want to give myself the chance to be uncomfortable.
You were surprised.
Yes. I was like, oh, holy smokes, there we go. And then I went the other direction.
It's not like you, at least you didn't like sit there and stare and like, yeah, it's hot.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
People weird like that.
I felt that I needed to just be somewhere else.
You felt this was a private moment and you did not need to be there.
Right. Right or wrong, I didn't want to be a part of it. So yeah,
you had no problem with her doing it there. You weren't going to make a stink, but you just did not need to be in their presence.
Yes.
While they did their thing.
That is correct. And I do not feel that I am wrong for feeling that way.
No. Yeah, nothing wrong with it.
For me, because I used to see that when I worked retail, and I even saw it like when I worked at Disneyland. Back then, people were a little bit more guarded about it, but they still whipped out a tit in public. They just made sure that they were properly covered with a blanket or something. But I've actually been out in public, and I have seen this happening, and I've seen a nipple. And my thing,
for you, Randy.
I've seen a nipple or two in my
What's
time.
It like, Randy?
Well, let me tell you, it's a lot less hairy than ours. But
they don't have the black wired rings around it.
Oh my god, those are the worst.
But but my thing was like, I was like, oh, I want to look, but it's like I shouldn't look, so I don't. And then I awkwardly end up like running into something, or I just like, then I realize that I've been standing there way too long while I'm processing this like inner monologue. Then I'm like, shit, now I've made things awkward.
Yeah.
And, well, you should do, Randy. You should take your lunch and sit over there. Yeah, this is lunch table. All right.
like Creed in The Office when they have the merger, and there's that lady breastfeeding. He just gets photos and just stares. Awful.
Yeah.
Randy, you are the Creed of this podcast.
Yeah, of the podcast, you're definitely Creed.
Yes. Holy shit, I don't even know where we're going with that.
Well, finishing the year out, we got Assassin's Creed on December 28th, which actually surprisingly looks better than it should. I'm interested to see how they work, you know, having it take place like 66, two-thirds per, in the future, and only one-third in the Animus, in the ancient, not that ancient, in the like 15th century Spain or wherever they are.
Spanish Inquisition, yeah.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting. And on that same day, we got Passengers, Christopher Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence in a movie that just says, hey, you love us both. We're in a movie together. Come watch us.
The two are like the biggest bankable celebrities in Hollywood right now.
Yeah. But it could be interesting. It's they go and suspended animation and they wake up 90 years too early when their ship malfunctions.
Oh shit.
Yeah, so
do they play board games?
I hope so. Little Cards Against Humanity.
Oh.
Which they sell at Target now.
Yeah, well, it was like an online exclusive forever.
Yeah. But you get it there now.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't.
Tabletop games have really taken over, man. Tabletop games, card games, board games. It's sort of like a renewed thing. Board games were awesome when I was a kid. You know, like Life, Sorry, Trouble, Monopoly, whatever, shit like that. But now there are a billion trillion games out there. You go to like an actual game store, and you will just lose your shit in all the different types of games that there are these days.
Yeah. There's a company called Cheap Ass Games. They actually just recently sent like 12 games over to my house, and they're kind of fun. And I'm glad that board games aren't dying, because I always loved playing board games when I was a kid.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Geek Legacy Podcast. Remember to check out geeklegacy.com for all your geek news and reviews. While you're there, be sure to check out the Comic Corner Podcast, hosted by Jeff and Tyler, where they talk about what's hot, what's not, on their pull list, find out what's going on in the world of comic books. Then you also have the Pixelated Podcast, which is every Friday, and that's hosted by Stephen K. James and myself, where we talk about the week's highlights in video game news. Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, at Geek Legacy, at Pixelated Pod, and at The Comic Corner. Thank you so much.